It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
And welcome into the podcast for this Monday. I'm Richard Skinner, Local12.com digital sports columnist and editor, with Rick Roaring and Chad Brendel as always. We got a lot of college basketball to talk about, but we have to talk about the Tuberville in the room first. And
one last chance
to pull us that little Tom of Tuberville.
Nice.
Chipotle. Get a lot of that Chipotle sauce.
Too much L in that.
There's Chipotle.
The thing was, he said it different every time.
Well, no. Not in
the original one, he said different like four times.
The one I'll give him credit for is... actually is Chipotle sauce,
yeah,
but somehow it's Chipotle the restaurant. Don't ask me how.
Well, then he's got it.
He might be right.
He's got it nailed.
Because you know what? You eat some Chipotle, and then you get some Bob Jones plumbing. Chipotle. All right, Chad. We've talked about this. We expected a decision of some kind to be made, likely to be fired after the 7th because that was the magical date money-wise. But he decides to make a preemptive strike and resign on Sunday. I'm guessing, but you probably have certainly way more knowledge, that they came to some kind of agreement.
Yes.
Whatever that differential in money from him getting fired on the 7th was to what he did yesterday, he probably didn't get all of it, but I'm guessing he got at least half of it.
I haven't heard his specific details.
Right.
They've kept that kind of under wraps. But, yeah, a settlement was reached was what I was told. And, you know, he moved along, and UC was able to get along with the process. And, you know, the interesting part is, if they would have waited.
Ding!
That's the cough count.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, we're at one.
That's if they would have waited, you know, Jeff Brom's probably off the market at that point, you know, and the landscape is completely different if they're starting this thing on Thursday,
right,
as opposed to starting it on Sunday. So, it was amicable. I think they did it as well as it possibly could have been handled.
Because they did it for the kids.
It was for the kids, yeah.
So, well, those are always amicable.
Student athletes.
Yeah. Student athletes, yeah.
It was handled as well as I think it could have been handled, given, you know, some of the nastiness and whatnot that was going around the program. Everybody seemed to walk away feeling pretty good about, you know, moving on and where things are headed.
What are you going
to
tell recruits now? What am I going to tell recruits?
Nothing.
You know what?
He's not going
to
tell them anything.
It does not help recruiting to resign the position. That makes it very difficult to recruit.
Yeah, you got a staff that's under contract, and they're still recruiting, and they don't have a head coach.
Yeah, so. UC just sent them out yesterday to tournaments or something, didn't they? Just sent them out again?
And that's the interesting part, because you know, we always look at the head coach portion of this financially, and what's it going to mean for that? But when you have, because you had a handful of new coaches on the staff because you lost a couple, Eddie Grant obviously being chief among them, you don't sometimes think about some of those contractual things. So what happens to some of the guys on this staff when a new head coach rolls into town?
It's going to be up to the head coach.
Okay.
Does he want to keep some continuity? Does he want to keep a few guys? I think there are definitely a few guys that are worth keeping, namely, Jeff Kuntz, who co-defensive coordinator, linebackers coach, Robert Prunty, co-defensive coordinator, defensive ends coach, and Blake Rowland, who coached the wide receivers. Those guys all, I thought, did a good job on the field and did a good job in recruiting as well. So I think it would be beneficial, depending on who comes in, if it's an up-and-comer like a Jeff Brom, to maybe keep one or two of those guys and see where things go going forward.
Could you foresee, and again, it's way too early for this, whatever recruiting class there is, falling apart? Or could you foresee most guys, if it's the right head coach that's hired, as long as this current staff of assistants continues to work it and mill it and all that, kind of salvaging things, for lack of a better term?
There's always going to be some turnover in a recruiting class when a coaching change is made, but so far there's only been one decommitment. That, ironically, is the kid that started the whole fans yelling stuff.
Right.
When that happened, he wanted to decommit then.
Were his parents there that night?
Yeah.
Yeah, his parents were.
Blake Yeager,
yeah.
he's from Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
It was his dad yelling? Is that what you said?
they were in a section that was getting pelted with some insults, and he was on the fence. So, I mean, that was...
I'll be positive.
I kind of thought he was probably going to decommit whether there was a coaching change or not.
This is on Lance McAllister.
Yes, it is.
This is on Lance.
Completely.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started on Lance right now. But we've confirmed four of the commits are still in the fold,
okay,
and we're working on, you know, getting a hold of some of the rest of them.
And we're still 2 months plus from signing day, so
yeah,
you've got time both on both sides of the equation,
yeah,
too. So
you know, unfortunately, I think they would like to get something done within the week and get things moving forward again. But you're going to miss out probably on a recruiting opportunity in open weekend this weekend. And I think once the following weekend hits, the bowl game starts. So those shut down until after the first of the year. And then you have a couple in January leading up to signing day. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what direction they go in.
You mentioned, let's talk about a couple of candidates. You mentioned Jeff Brom, who's at Western Kentucky and done a very good job.
BearcatJournal.com. That's where we're talking about that.
Yes, we are. That's good. That's a good plug. You're always allowed to get that plug in. Where does he fall in the pecking order? I mean, is he number one?
I would think he's number
to
one.
To go after? And, yeah. I mean, he's got semi-regional ties. I mean, he played at Louisville and I'm sure has been up in this area recruiting. And yeah, certainly down at Western has recruited this area somewhat. Would he be a guy that you don't put all the eggs in that basket?
I think you make a run at him first. Yeah. You know, and you have to right now because he's got Purdue and Baylor offers on the table.
I just can't,
being reported.
I just can't see anybody. The Purdue job is just garbage.
It's a wasteland.
It's
and
a
Baylor,
complete wasteland.
And Baylor is,
Baylor could be on 27-year probation, yeah, for all we know. I mean, they you could know. Be on triple secret, quadruple, double secret probation until the cows come home.
On the bright side, if you take the Baylor job, your players can do literally just about anything, and you still will have improved
the program.
Still will have improved the program.
Right. Yeah, that's
program.
You know, all he did was shoplift. And yeah, all he did was pull a gun on the guy.
Yeah.
He didn't rape
him. He didn't even shoot anybody.
Right. He's all right.
Yeah.
He's one of the good kids.
Yeah, I think there's some upside to the Baylor job.
The problem with the Baylor job is because everything happened when it did. I mean, they've got one commitment in this 2017 class. So the question you have with Jeff, yes, he spent a tiny bit of time as an assistant down at, I think, Texas Tech. But what, you know, does he have the adequate ties to Texas to go in there?
And that's big. I mean, that's
huge down there. That's everything down there. So it's an interesting situation. I mean, you know, UC could put together an interesting compensation package. I had the chance to talk to Mike Bone last night. There's a video on BearcatJournal.com with Mike Bone, and it's from what he said in that video. They are embracing being kind of a place that welcomes guys that are on their way up.
Yeah. Stepping stone job is what they call that.
Stepping stone job in quotation marks. I think that's the right thing to do. I think when you're in that situation, they just tried. Let's find a guy that'll stay, that is comfortable in his career and is on the back end, and we can have him for as long as we want him. That didn't work.
Nope.
So go embrace that. And I wasn't sure because we haven't seen Mike Bone handle a coaching search here. I wasn't sure how it was going to feel. I walked away last night feeling like they've got a pretty good grasp and they've got things pretty well under control.
And let's face this. If you are not in a Power 5 conference, I mean, you're a stepping stone. That's absolutely what
you
are.
If you're at the bottom of the Power 5, you're a stepping stone.
In some cases, yes.
So unless you're, you know, Ohio State and Texas and Oklahoma, you're a stepping stone job. Grasp it.
You mentioned the two jobs, the Baylor and the Purdue job, and Oregon also open, Houston, obviously, because Tom Herman left as well. But there aren't
I guess it's a great market.
The good part is there's not a lot of jobs open.
No, I mean, if you've got a legitimate four or five guys you think can really do the job, you're going to get one of them, I think. You know, P.J. Fleck, there was some sentiment you know, as the silly season was getting started, that he was only going to take a P5 job.
Right.
But Oregon's really the only one he's in play for. He's already said no to Purdue, and I don't think...
And I don't blame him.
Right. So does he reevaluate that, or does he say, I'm going to coach the Cotton Bowl, stay at Western Michigan, and see what happens next year?
Don't do that. Yeah, you got to strike when the iron's out.
I think that's the case as well.
You can't roll the dice on that.
So if that's the case...
Even if that means taking the UC
job. That's what I'm saying. If that's the case, then he might have to reevaluate and reconsider the Cincinnati job.
I think UC should just try to sign a deal with, like, the MAC, where every 3 to 5 years they just get the best coach out of the MAC.
I mean, and just rotate it's a smart deal.
Yeah. That's the earlier stepping stone. Exactly. So they just move your way up.
That's what it is.
Now, I will ask the $64,000 question because it's been asked. I know you've shot it down. I am going to ask.
Why?
Because I'm a big fan.
I'm not a candidate. I think they need Kerry Combs.
I do too.
Kerry Combs, UC's football program is going to just fall apart.
Why not?
You're an idiot.
Completely.
Here's where I'll phrase this. Why not Kerry Combs?
He's What makes you like comfortable with that? He's been at Ohio State for how long now? Six years?
6 years, yeah.
He hasn't moved up at all. They've had four different defensive coordinators. He's never even been moved towards that position.
A coordinator?
Rocky Boyman is a coordinator?
Yeah, who cares? What does that mean?
What it means that you're being given added responsibility, that you're moving up the staff, that you're climbing up the ladder.
Let me give you a Super Bowl head coach who won a Super Bowl.
Skinny, he's not a candidate.
Let me give you
a Super Bowl head coach. He's not a candidate. So why are we doing this?
Because I think it's silly that he's not a candidate. I think he's not.
It's silly not to interview him.
Absolutely.
Silly.
It's more
for what? They're not hiring him. That's not what they're looking for. They're looking for young, energetic, offensive minded. He doesn't fit any of those criteria.
But he's like 35 at heart.
He could coach at least 75.
He thinks young.
He could coach at least 75. I've had that argument thrown at me about him being a coordinator. What difference does that make?
You don't think that Urban Meyer hasn't moved him up the responsibility chain?
How do you know he hasn't been asked?
Oh, Kerry Combs turned it down.
You never know. I mean, he might make more money being a recruiter for all I know.
Rocky Boyman says he'll recruit local players.
You know the great part is? He didn't land kids in Cincinnati when he was here.
Well,
he had to go to Indianapolis. He was great recruiting Indianapolis when he was here. He did not recruit Cincinnati well when he was here.
They had some pretty good success, though.
Can you see not win with Indianapolis?
Is Brian Kelly coming back and Kerry's going to be the secondary coach?
I would think not.
Well, okay, then.
What if Brian Kelly gets fired in a year or two from Notre Dame? That's not off the table.
Well, what's going to happen is Brian Kelly's
coach, I think.
Brian Kelly's coming back as head coach. Butch Jones is going to be offensive coordinator, and Mark D'Antonio is going to be defensive coordinator.
And then special teams.
Kerry will be special teams and recruiting coordinator. And it's going to be fine.
And then DePaul will rehire Dave Leda.
All I'm going to tell you is the whole coordinator part of it, though, is, I mean.
Well, it's not coordinator. It's skinny. He hasn't. There's been no upward trajectory at Ohio State.
Okay, Urban Meyer has reduced
his responsibilities.
I'm going to give you an NFL coach who was special teams coordinator from 1998 to 2007 and then became a head coach in the NFL. John Harbaugh.
Congratulations.
I mean, he never was a coordinator.
You got one example.
How long
has the NFL been in existence? You have one freaking example.
Frank Gans is another one. I just thought I'd throw that out at you.
How much milk is drank in the Combs household that might be relevant to? The Harbaughs drink a lot of milk.
Okay.
I'm saying.
Gotcha.
They're special.
Gotcha.
On the milk thing.
I just think, honestly, though, just to cut the chase before we get to basketball, I think it's silly not to look at him.
It's absolutely the right move.
I'm glad Chad's not fired up about Kerry Combs at all.
I know.
I'm tired of hearing about it.
Steal your lunch money?
I think it's personal.
I think it is.
I think it's personal. I think when he was covering high schools, Kerry Combs would not take his phone call. What do you think?
Kerry Combs didn't recruit you.
That's what.
When you were at Lloyd.
That's what it was. So there we go.
So Kerry Combs to UC, you heard it here first.
I think it's silly.
I think he's the lead candidate.
I think it's silly for them not to look at him. Absolutely moronically silly.
They're not looking at him. He's not on the list.
Okay. Well, that's stupid.
Final answer.
I bet he gets the job. I'm going to say this.
How much you want to bet?
I'll put my sources up against your sources right now that Kerry Combs is going to get an interview.
The loser has to not speak for an entire show.
Dad.
Are they allowed to cough?
Yes, cough still.
But I'm not in on that. I can't.
Or scoff, one
unfair.
Or the other.
That's unfair.
Because you scoff enough, he can cough, and we'll be good.
Okay, I'm good with that.
All right. Let's move on to some basketball. Certainly a busy weekend. We will start with Xavier. That'll give you a chance to kind of catch your breath for a second. Kerry Combs online, too, in case you're wondering.
Or cough.
He wants to talk to you.
I've got some stuff off the air that...
Okay. Here we go. Let's talk about Xavier on Saturday. Rick, disappointing or just... Because they really were up, and all of a sudden, then they were down, and then the game was over, and, you know, you lose by 15. It kind of played out a little bit to the way you talked about it, though, and what they did defensively.
Yeah, I mean, it played out exactly like what we were talking about. Basically, Xavier hit a couple of those threes in the first half. They played well offensively. They played well defensively. I think if you're a Xavier fan, you look at it and you say, for the first half, Xavier played like the better team, didn't look overwhelmed by Baylor's size and athleticism. Xavier had 18 offensive rebounds against Baylor's size. They couldn't finish in against those guys, which is obviously a concern that we were well aware of coming into this game. But if you're a Xavier fan, I think you're pleasantly surprised about the first half, and then you look at the second half and you say, you miss a bunch of free throws, Trayvon Blewett gets his third and fourth foul within a couple minutes of each other to open the half, and he goes out, and that really changed things. And JP McCarroll was 2 for 16 and played his worst game of the season. So it was kind of a fluky second half, one where I think you look at it, you say, it's not that Xavier's not good enough to compete with this Baylor team, it's where they fell apart in the second half. And so now you start wondering, okay, what is the upside of this team with the current front court personnel and their inability to finish against any length? And how much margin for error do the perimeter players have in a big game like this? Like, it does it mean JP McCarr and Trayvon Blewett and Edmund Sumner have to be great every single time if you're going to beat a good team?
I think it's obviously not trending right now because there's not a lot of games to fall on, but I think there's some truth to that.
Well, there's certainly some truth to that. I think that, but that's the question, is how much, right? Like, I mean,
yeah.
Can you survive? JP was 2 for 16 and played his worst game maybe in 2 years. Can you survive in playing an average game? Can you, you know?
This was the extreme of it. Yeah.
Right, so those are just the question marks that need to be answered kind of going forward is, can you win? I mean, obviously the bigs aren't going to be able to finish against length. I think that much is clear.
I will tell you, Baylor's interesting because if you even look at their Louisville win, I mean, they outscored Louisville 42-24 in the second half. I mean, maybe it's just a second half thing.
Oh, they have been. They did that entire tournament.
Yeah, that whole thing.
Every,
right.
Every game in that tournament. I think it comes back to the questions that we had from the start, you know, like you kind of just touched on. Inside play, are they going to, you know, be able to finish against the length? And I think I need more Tyreek Jones in my life because yeah. I think he can do that. I think we've
He'll foul
seen
out in 7 minutes, but
I think we've seen from Rasheed Gaston that it's a major issue. Finishing. I mean, he's a below the rim guy, and he looks like he's trying to finesse the ball into the basket without it getting blocked, and he misses a ton.
Yeah, and that was I said this last year when I was watching him in practice against James and Jalen. I was like, yeah, I mean, it's James and Jalen, they're long, but they're not like extraordinarily shot blockers by any stretch. And he couldn't finish last year in practice, so I knew this was a concern for him. I thought he may never be able to really score for this team, but he does rebound well, he does defend well, and he did those two things. He rebounded extraordinarily well against this big Baylor front court, and that's fine. The difference is he can't just go back up. I mean, like, he has to realize, okay, I can't finish. I can't score on the block against these guys.
Kick it back out.
Right. Get it back out. And then when you do have your opportunities, it has to be, which he did later in the second half, a reverse finish where you're using the rim to protect yourself. Yep. He missed it, but he at least tried that. And then the other thing is look for short, you know, the 6 to 12 footer jumper. Right. I mean, face up and do that. But other than that, you can't throw the ball into him and try to get points out of
him. They
also had issues with turnovers and they had issues with free throws.
The turnovers and free throws things in the second half.
They've got to clean that up to get to where they want to get to. That can't keep being a recurring theme.
It can't. And the free throw thing, to a certain extent, you have to get the right guy shooting them.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't in this one. I don't worry as much about the free throw thing. That usually plays itself out. It's more of a percentage game. I do worry about the turnovers just because we've been talking about this with Edmund Sumner. He's kind of still trying to figure out that balance between being a distributor, being a scorer, being the go-to player on the offense, and then also you threw in a zone and some length, and they really struggled with that. And he just looked like he didn't exactly know what he was supposed to do. And that led to the whole offense being a little uncomfortable.
Now, when we look at big picture, there aren't a lot of teams in the country that have that length either.
No, I mean, Baylor legitimately has an argument right now that they're the best team in the country. I mean, legitimately.
Right.
Especially after what we saw UK do in the UCLA game, and we'll talk about that coming up. I think Baylor, if you look at what they do defensively, there's no one in the country that is more intimidating or more physically imposing with what they do, because it's also different. It's not something you can
correct.
You practice against or you see each game. You get a ton of work against. So I think that's a very good point, that Baylor can do this to a lot of different teams. And then the other thing that Baylor's doing, and Scott Drew deserves a lot of credit, because I've never been high on him as an X&O guy, but they are extremely disciplined in, one, how they play that zone, which we just talked about, and then their offense. You know, we talk about UC a little bit, and I was mentioning last week how UC, with their offense, they need more pace. And I think sometimes people hear that when I say that, and they think, I mean, they need to run up and down the court and play faster. I don't mean they need more possessions. I mean they need to run through their offense faster in the court with more tempo.
Right.
And Baylor, watch Baylor if you're a UC fan. That's what UC should be doing. They're disciplined. They take tons of time off the clock. They're very patient. They don't get out and run, but they run through their offense very quickly and create a lot of movement before they get into their shots. And I think Scott Drew deserves a lot of credit for making his team that disciplined.
The AP Top 25 will come out after we do this podcast today, but we're going to work off of Gary Parrish from CBS Sports, his Top 25. Again, these are all – even the AP one and the coaches is still obviously a subjective thing, but they're still interesting measuring sticks and still discussion points. Xavier will probably in the AP poll drop out of the top 10. I think we can agree with that when it comes out today.
They should.
But I don't think they should fall as far as Gary dropped them. Gary dumped them all the way down to 17 and moved Baylor up to 3. That seems odd to me that you go to somebody's place, you outplay them for a half and a little bit more. They certainly outplay you by a ton when it mattered and end up winning by a decent margin. But really, you're going to tumble a team that far off of a road loss when they were in the game for a good chunk of it?
Did you read his explanation?
I did. Because of the close loss of the Lehigh, Missouri. I mean, are we going to seriously look at every single game and go, because they only beat them by one early in the year, you're going to hold it against them?
Can it be about how they played? And those issues showed back up against Baylor. So now this is three times that Baylor's
pretty good.
It can, but you've got to apply that universally. And if you look at all the other teams that you're dropping, all those other teams played bad games too. And some of them lost multiple games.
Right.
So what it comes down to is this, and we saw this the first week of the polls. The pollsters didn't believe Xavier was a top 10 team to start this
Correct.
Year. They had them ranked like number 7. They beat Lehigh in a close game. They dropped them 4 spots.
Right.
The AP did. That was absurd to begin with. So they clearly didn't believe they were a top 10. Gary Parrish is in that same boat. For some reason, this is what we talked about with the recruiting stuff last week with the national media members. It's in vogue. It was popular to have Xavier as a top 10 team.
Right.
So all these media members did it without believing they were actually a top 10 team. And that's
you were just waiting for one chink in the armor. Right.
Yeah. And now they will drop a bunch of spots in the polls today too, way farther than they should. I bet. It'll be
below 15.
I think so. It'll be like a
really.
I think it'll be close to 15. It should be right around 11 or 12. 11 to 13 would be right. They'll be 15 to lower because of the same thing Parrish said, which is I didn't really believe it was as high as I had.
I don't think so because I don't think that the people doing the polls put as much time and thought into it as a guy like Parrish.
No, I give you that part. I think that part's probably true.
I think they'll take for the most part you'll see people do what. Along the lines of, they lost at number 3 Baylor. They were undefeated until then, or at number 4 Baylor or whatever.
I think they'll be
in 11, 12, 13 range is what I think.
Oh, that's where they should be. That's totally fair. I expect it to be more than that because of the exact reason Parrish
I just don't think
them.
People put that much. I don't think those people put that much
but
time
I'm saying
into they, it.
But what I'm saying is I don't think any of them believed Xavier was a top 10 team either. They were
looking for the one crack.
Yeah.
All right, before we move on to UC, and we want to talk certainly Kentucky-UCLA from the weekend too and the ramifications from that. We do have a game to talk about because they do play on Wednesday at Colorado. This becomes now a pretty big game off the loss at Baylor.
Yeah, it really does. If you look at Colorado, it's not the game. Before the season, I was thinking it might be the tougher game between Baylor and Colorado. Both teams had question marks. For Baylor, things have gone much better than expected.
Gone very well.
For Colorado, things haven't gone quite as well as expected, although they're still solid. Their best win is over Texas, who's 71st in KenPom right now. They just took a home loss to Colorado State last week on Wednesday, and that was 72-58. Wasn't a great game for them. They only scored 58 points. Colorado State's ranked 129th in KenPom. The thing about this Colorado lineup, I don't think it presents the matchup issues for Xavier that we talked about in previous podcasts, which is they don't have a great point guard that creates out of ball screens. They don't have a ton of length and athleticism around the rim. The interesting thing is everyone in their lineup is over 6'5", 200 pounds. They're just a bunch of tall, big, strong dudes, and they're really tough defensively, but I don't think you can beat a Chris Mack coached Xavier team, at least the personnel we've seen him have since he's been here, by being just grittier and tougher than them. I think you have to find something that gives them trouble with athleticism or talent or ability. I don't think you can just out-tough them.
That said, the logistics of this are a little difficult, though. I mean, you do play at Baylor. I mean, again, you're back home at a decent time, but, I mean, there's not a lot of turnaround time, and again, you're taking one trip to a central time zone and back, a little practice, a little class, take a trip to a mountain time zone. It could factor into that a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. And you're dealing with adversity. You just came off a loss. So you got, fortunately, your kind of main core of guys never really seemed to affect them last year. So
right.
I think you don't really concern yourself as much about their psyche right now. But definitely, I mean, if they come out and don't shoot it well at Colorado, which is a great possibility because of what you just explained, they could easily lose to this team. Colorado's solid. I mean, they have the requisite talent to compete for sure.
And then you can tumble them.
Well, then you would have to tumbling pretty good. I mean,
yeah, no, I think that part's fair. I just don't think one half of basketball on the road against a team that everybody's talking now is a top four or five team dings you that hard. That's the only thing I would say.
No, I agree with Parrish in the sense that he said he wanted to move them down a little bit after some of the things he saw, but he didn't because they kept winning.
But see but that's stupid to me. But before you're saying, okay, well, can it be about how they're playing? Yes, it should have been how they're playing.
I disagree. Yeah, I disagree that he didn't move them down when he felt he should.
Earlier. How about this? Don't be a follower early in the season. If you don't think Xavier's a top 10 team and everyone else has,
no, I agree with that.
Don't put them up there.
I agree with
that. I'm fine with that. If you said Xavier wasn't a top 10 team to this point, I'm fine with you right now saying they're 15th or worse. But if you did ever think, at
if you had them up at 6
team,
and
then you're crazy to think they're 18 now. Because of a loss.
I agree with the point that if he felt they should have dropped, he should have dropped them before losing to a top five team on their floor.
Yeah, my point is not at all about what Xavier deserves right now. It's about how people do their rankings and how much of copycats they are off of each other.
I agree with that.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the UC's win last night, and they've got a big game coming up. We'll talk a little bit more about on Friday with Butler, but because they do have a whole week really to prepare, so I do want to touch on that.
Finals week, but...
But Kyle Washington it just continues to play well.
Did I just hear a Washington in there?
Yeah.
That was an R in
Warsh.
There? Okay.
Warsh. I don't do wash.
Good.
I don't do the wash. I don't do ketchup.
You do the wash.
Yeah, I do ketchup. It's ketchup and wash.
Washington.
Wash.
Rick, is it possible that he's better than we thought he was?
Oh, he is. I mean,
I thought he was going to be really good. I didn't expect.
Put it this way. He's almost living up to the expectations you were setting for him in the summer, which is always astronomically too high for UC's players, and he's legitimately playing at that level.
Him and Jacob were the only ones I was setting at that level, though, and they're the ones that are performing at that level.
But in the past, you've set guys that weren't as good at that level.
He's top 10 in the country.
He likes the summer. He likes what he sees in the summer.
He does. He's a big summer practice
guy. 5-1-0, it can make you a hell of a player.
5-0, Kyle Washington is killing.
He's killing it. Watch his drop step 5-0.
I will say this. The one thing I thought was really interesting about Kyle Washington is the thing I've been talking about since we started is he caught the ball really close to the basket the whole game.
I mean, he's not floating. He is doing his work from 12 feet in.
And that's so funny because you made a good point. It was a great point that exhibition season or exhibition game where he literally ran to the 3-point line as opposed to doing what he should do, use his size.
You know, now he's doing what is comfortable to him, and it's like he's got a tracking device on the net. I mean, just from any angle, any spot, he just flips that little left-handed flip, and the thing hits nothing but bottom of the net. I mean, it's you know, there's some times on press row that he'll hit something and we just look at each other like, the hell did that even...
Yeah, but some guys are awkwardly clever with that kind of stuff. And those make it hard to defend because it's not prototypical, so you have a hard time stopping it.
He has a natural knack for it that I've... Right. Like I've ever, I mean, Jared Sullinger, do you remember how he used to have such an extraordinary knack for angles?
Yeah.
Like, no matter where he was, he could find a way to just bank it in on you, and he'd hit it
perfectly.
Except
Kyle does
it
bottom of the net.
Kyle does it from 14 feet away, just sinking swishes on a fake hook shot. One of the more bizarre skill sets I've ever seen out of a big
completely. And I think he's at a point where he's buying into how they want him to be used. He'll still, you know, fire up an 18-footer from time to time. But typically they've been pretty wide open as the season has continued to progress. You know, that Rhode Island game, he took a couple terrible shots. But we haven't seen those really since then. So he's settling into this role, and it's remarkable to me how well he's been able to put the ball in the basket in so many different ways.
The other guy that really stood out in this game was Justin Jenner.
Yeah, shooting the ball.
And again, it's just like every time I see him do a little bit more, I'm just like, I never thought that guy would be
able to
do this.
We're in the same
boat. And also the shooting, the way he shot the ball last night, the consistency, it hasn't been there yet, obviously. Is the confidence that he showed last night, though, is that permanent? Has he felt that way pretty much this season from what we've seen?
I mean, I think it's coming game by game. Now the next step for him, we've seen him do it against mid and low major opponents. Now the next step for him is making that type of impact in a big game. You know, to come out against Butler and hit a three or two or make a couple, you know, big plays.
Obviously, he didn't have an impact in the Iowa State game. Did you feel like he just didn't get the opportunity, or did you feel like he wasn't ready for that?
The way the game played.
I actually thought when he was in, he played fair. Like, he didn't hurt them when he was in the game. He just didn't have a lot of opportunity to do much. I felt when he was on the floor, though, he belonged. Last year when he played in a big game,
he didn't belong.
He didn't belong. And I didn't feel he was out of place in that Iowa State game, even though he didn't really get a chance to do much.
And
I,
sometimes the way that a game like that plays out, it's two possession, one possession, two possession, one possession, 50 to 50
right, at the end of regulation.
Right. And, right. That sometimes doesn't allow you to sub maybe the way you had planned to sub, wanted to sub.
Yeah.
You know, you just keep going, I got to leave these guys in for another possession, another possession, another possession, and you just keep sticking with them.
And with that being the case, I think as a UC fan, you're really starting to like what you're seeing from Justin Jennifer.
Well, it gives you potentially now an 8-man rotation.
Well, and what it also does is it gives you a little bit of option of relieving some of the pressure of Troy having to play point guard for 38 minutes a game.
Line of versatility. I mean, it just changes things. All of a sudden, now you can slide because Troy can play the two or the three even. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's not his. But it gives you a second point guard on the floor. It gives you, you know, it was interesting yesterday. Mick had a quick hook on Troy at the beginning of the game.
I was going to bring that up next.
He pulled him out within a minute and a half, 2 minutes, put Justin in. Justin was an instant spark. And then as the game went on, he played them together, and Troy was attacking, playing like an attacking wing, playing downhill, getting to the basket, getting and-ones, you know, finishing right at the rim instead of relying on the jump shot that has not worked
there
for him this year to this point. It was an interesting dynamic. I mean, it was really good to see the way that those two played together yesterday.
I thought Mick deserved credit for the yanking Troy within a minute and a half or whatever it was. And then he took out two more starters within the next 30 seconds.
A couple missed box outs, and he just said, "You get out."
But I thought, because they started so sluggish, I mean, they didn't score for like the first 3 minutes of the game.
0 for 6.
And they had like one field goal at the first media timeout or whatever it was. And he pushed that button and just said, I'm not watching it. Like, we're not going to struggle through half of this game against a Bowling Green after the way we played the other night. And sure enough, I mean, they turned around, and by halftime, you're in the lead and control and you cruise. I thought he deserved credit for pushing the right button there.
Yeah, he said in the post game that he came into practice upset yesterday because he knew getting them off of that hangover from Iowa State was going to be, he came into practice pissed off yesterday. Or Saturday, he came in to shoot around, pissed off Sunday. He came to the game, pissed off Sunday night. And he anticipated that it was going to be flat to start. And he went straight to the bench. And you have to give those guys credit. They immediately stepped in and stepped up. The more Nysier Brooks gets on the floor, I mean, the more and more quality you're starting to see from him. He had a nice little baby hook from the right baseline, and that kid, it's not going to be this year, but that kid's got a really, really bright future.
And really, as bad as their bench was against Iowa State, he had 4 rebounds and a monster putback in the first half. That was impressive. I will say, it seems like coming into this year, it was kind of a similar situation that Xavier was in last year when they had McKinday, London, and Kaiser Gates kind of battling for one spot, and it's like, oh no, we can play both of them. We've got two good players, but you quickly see,
eventually the minutes dry. You don't have the minute for them in
a real game,
right.
And so it's like one of those guys get the chance to be the backup big man. Nysier Brooks is clearly taking that opportunity away from Quadri Moore.
Yeah, I mean, Nysier Brooks gives you a lot more. I mean, he gives you a size that they don't have on the team at 6'11" and 240 pounds. He's been a good rim protector. He's been surprisingly good defensively, and he's starting to get you some points where, you know, with Quadri, he's a guy that, you know, he can knock down a shot here and there, but, you worry about him in some other facets of the game, and, I mean, you could see it coming that this was probably going to be, you know, how things played out, but, you know, unfortunately, Quad got a little frustrated last night and got pulled after a traveling violation and kind of sat there with his head in his hands the rest of the night because he knew he messed up his opportunity to make an impact. But, I mean, you feel bad for kids because it does get, you know, they're putting a lot of time in, and I'm sure it does get pretty frustrating to not have it go your way, but
you get a chance. You kind of perform. It's pretty simple.
Nysier Brooks has been getting his chance, and he's been going out there and doing a good job helping the team in his role.
All right, let's segue into the Kentucky-UCLA talk. Let's hear from Lonzo Ball's dad.
I'm going to tell you right now before you see it. UCLA going to win the NCAA championship. You think I'm playing?
You're calling it right here, right now.
Right here and right now. Guaranteed. Come see me when they win it.
Lonzo Ball's dad doesn't sound nearly as crazy as he did 1 week ago.
No, that's my point. We need to hear from him because now I'm going to have to say, you know what? Maybe you ain't so crazy after all.
You know where he should have saved that soundbite for?
Rupp Arena?
Yes. Rupp Arena and not Portland, the Portland game.
Yeah.
I will say this, and you guys joked about Kentucky hitting 130 if UCLA hit 100 last week.
Yep.
Kentucky is very good at putting points on the board off of their defense. What we saw is they are not very good yet, and maybe they will be, but they are not very good at offense yet. I think because of tempo and because of the way they play defense, and you saw in the first half when they were creating turnovers, they
pushed the lead out.
They pushed the lead out and had control of the game. What UCLA is really, really good at is offense. All of it, all parts of it.
The one thing I'll give
TJ Leaf was nails.
Didn't back down from what they did whatsoever. Didn't come in with a game plan of, oh, we're in Rupp. We need to change what we do. We're on the road. We need to change what we do. We're playing a really talented team. We need to change what we do. They didn't change anything what they did. They just went and did it.
And that's who that kid, that's who that is. I mean, that's their identity.
And that's the thing about this, though. You look at it and you say, well, that game plan that they used, there's nothing special about it. It's very easy to replicate and execute. Well, it's very easy to perform their game plan, which is basically just have 5 feet in the lane. I mean, they are really making it tight, not giving UK room to drive, not giving them room to throw it into BAM. The problem is to do that against UK, you have to score on the other end so you can set your defense.
Right.
Because if you don't set your defense, they get in transition.
And they're dunking.
It's impossible. It is impossible to stop them if you let them run at all.
And you also have to be efficient on offense, too. I mean, if you do that and they start throwing some threes in and you don't score on the other end, yay, A, transition, B, suddenly you're down 15 to 18 and you're going to have to change completely what you do.
That's the issue, is you've got no – most teams can't score against Kentucky's defense.
Not like that.
Consistent enough to set their defense on the other end. UCLA was able to do that, and that was the big difference. We mentioned about UK earlier in the season. Talked about how they don't shoot it well enough, and when they don't shoot it, they don't have the experience and chemistry together to create the ball movement to be efficient in the half court. Derek Willis helps them with that because he can stretch the floor a little bit and make shots.
Right.
But he is such he decreases their defensive ability so much.
And he so wanted to be a good defender. I mean, he talked openly about that. It's just not there.
He just can't do it. And it's not so much that he's bad one-on-one like himself. He can usually guard his man enough. The difference is when he's not on the court, they're so versatile and interchangeable with their athleticism and length that they can switch.
You can switch everything. You can switch everything.
Everything.
Right.
And it's so much different look than when he gets on the court and now you can't do that.
Correct. I think it was more, you know, you look at it, Kentucky just doesn't lose non-conference games at Rupp under Cal. Kentucky didn't play an awful, awful game, but I think this spoke to, you know, we were kind of questioning UCLA, and UCLA really answered the bell,
No question. I mean, this is the most impressive win of the year so far, easily, but probably the most impressive win we're going to see all season because it's at Rupp Arena.
Right.
Against that team. And this UK team, I don't feel much worse about this UK team. I'm like, there are some questions. The questions we had about them were the right questions, and I continue to have them. But I'm more impressed with UCLA than anything else after this game.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to look at it and say, you know what? They're going to play to that identity. They're going to own it. I mean, then they're going to
have a night this year where they lose to somebody. You go, how that? It's because the style of play is going to get them at some
point.
You can't.
You're going to miss shots. Occasionally, good shots. But I
tip of the cap to them. I mean, you know what? They decided they were going to play this way. They played this way, and they came to Rupp and owned it.
How many points are they going to average on the season per game?
I mean, they're at 97, and they scored 97 against the best defensive team I've seen.
I mean,
so
are they going to? Do you think they finish the season above 90?
I'm pretty comfortable with them averaging 94 a game.
Yeah, I think they ended the game at what, 96, and got their number. So I'm going to say at least 90.
I wonder when the last time a high major team.
That's a great point.
Well, didn't you, North Carolina average like 92 last year?
Did they averaged 92?
I thought they did.
I'm going to have to, now that you're doing that, I wouldn't think it would be that high.
I can see some Carolina teams that averaged in the 80s, but I don't remember them ever. I think I would have. I don't remember them going through ACC plays, putting up those kind of numbers every night.
UCLA just went into Lexington and said, we're going to score 97 every night this season, no matter what you guys do.
No, that
was the statement made. I don't know if they will.
I agree.
But that was clear. Like they said,
you're going to have to outscore us.
Yeah. We do not care because we can do this against anyone. You brought up TJ Leaf.
Man, he was good.
He's looking like a more efficient Henry Ellenson already.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you loved Henry Ellenson.
Loved Henry Ellenson. He's really talented. Really talented dude. But Leaf is more efficient. He doesn't need all the bad shots to do all the same things that Ellenson did.
I agree. And, I mean, he just made it look easy against Kentucky. Especially Kentucky kept trying to come back at the end. And UCLA just kept feeding the ball to Leaf, pump in 10, 12, 15 footers. Bang, 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 bang.
I think my favorite part of the game, when Cal legitimately put Bam on ball to defend him for like multiple possessions. Not like he got switched onto him. Like they actually said, you've got him now. And they put their center on the best point guard in the country for like four or five possessions. It was unbelievable. And Bam was fine.
Yeah. I missed some of that because UC had a media session at 1:30 on a Saturday afternoon.
Oh, man. That's a bad beat.
Clutch.
Yeah, that's a bad beat. By the way, UCLA isn't even the highest scoring team in the country this year.
No.
Right.
But it's early.
Conference still.
It's the Citadel.
Oh, of course.
The Citadel who
gave up 150 to
130, yes. Yeah,
but 130 to 60 against UC.
But they're going to score theirs. I'm going to try to find the last year's for you here in a
54
second.
54 and 45
minutes. I would tell you I can't believe a team had averaged 90 points last year. I don't see that. But maybe you're right. We'll see. By the way, as we were talking there, apparently Kerry Combs has gotten back into play.
Wait, what was that?
Jeff Brown to Purdue.
Oh, okay. So, Kerry Combs to UC?
Kerry Combs back in play.
Kerry Combs to UC. Heard it here first.
I hate both of you.
I got to tell you, and I'm going to get your all's final take here in just a second on basketball. The Purdue job is just not a good job. I mean,
he just ended his career.
He did. I mean, he can always go back to Western after it doesn't work there, I guess.
Drew Brees coming back? Or
I don't. Yeah.
Joe Tiller going to be on staff? Or?
The next time Purdue will win is when Drew Brees takes over the head coaching job.
Is Drew Brees Jr. going to be the little kid from the Super Bowl?
Exactly.
In his arms?
Yeah.
That's going to be the quarterback?
That's kind of what I was assuming, yeah.
Yeah, holy cow.
I don't get it. I mean, apparently the word is that from Dan Wolken that when Baylor offered, Purdue came back and gave him even more money. So you're talking the $3.5 to $4 million a year range.
I do get the money. I do. I understand it. I mean, we all have to make a living, and you have a chance to strike when the iron's hot and all that jazz. But I just wouldn't go somewhere where if it's going to give me $5 million in the short term extra, where as opposed to what I could maybe make long term down the road,
right.
I don't think I would do it. I think that's nutty. That's just nutty in my opinion. So there you go. All right, final take time first from the coughing man, Chad Brendel.
I think I'm going to go with Gonzaga at this point.
By the way, for my Warsh, they're not the Zogs. They are the Zags.
Zags.
So it is Gonzaga.
Gonzaga.
Not Gonzaga.
Gonzaga.
There you go. Just thought I'd throw
that out. Gonzaga. Gonzaga.
Gonzag. They're not the Zogs. Go ahead.
Washington.
They're not the flashiest Gonzaga team. Gonzaga team. Sorry, Skinny.
Yeah, go ahead. You're good.
Jesus Christ. they've got a lot of good parts. I really like what Josh Perkins is doing for them. Karnowski, the big man in the middle, gives them a presence that I don't really think anybody in the country has. It'll be interesting in the race for, smaller, mostly irrelevant teams to get to their first Final Four. Is Gonzaga going to make it there before Xavier?
And let's face it, they lost a couple of really key guys, too. I mean,
they did.
So, you think that they would take a dip, and they haven't taken a dip. Gonzaga.
Gonzaga.
So there you go. By the way, I looked it up.
Xavier?
In case you're wondering. Xavier. No, don't do that. Oh, boy, don't do that. Don't do that.
Xerox? Xylophone?
Yes. Exactly. Don't do that. I did look it up. Oakland led the nation scoring last year at 86.3. Carolina averaged they averaged even less than that.
Carolina Oakland averaged led the nation.
82.3 is what Carolina averaged.
I said 82, not 92.
Yeah, 82.3.
I forgot to carry the one.
That's all right. Yeah, sometimes that's a big key.
People forget that.
Yeah. But no, so nobody did score over 90 last year. So
yeah, there you go.
All right. Final take, Rick Brewery. I meant to say, here you go. Let me tee it up for you. Final take for Rick Brewery.
All right, thank you. Now I can go. I'm going to go with the Duke freshman. We finally seen two of them come back. Jason Tatum and Marquez Bolden are back in the mix. I love Jason Tatum. I think he's got a chance to be the best player in the draft, number one overall pick, to be quite honest. I think he can do everything on offense. I'm not saying yet. I'm just saying he has that type of ability. I'm not saying he'd be the guy to choose right now, but he has that ability. I think fans are going to love watching him. I don't know with the two guns he's got in his backcourt and Grayson Allen and Luke Kennard that'll get enough touches to put up those type of numbers. But he's really fun to watch. Marcus Bolden, 6'11", 245. Not as high on him, but it'll be interesting to see him back in the mix. The big question, Harry Giles hasn't returned yet.
I don't.
Should he return at all this year, or should he take Jason Williams' advice? Jay Williams is telling him to work out, sit the year out, and just enter the draft next year.
I would sit out. He's got too much on the line.
I was going to say that there is too much on the line. A, you come back at 75% and don't show anything and cost yourself money. Do you?
Well, it's not. Well,
I don't think they would bring him back unless he's 100%.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's going to be 100% physically, but I guess skinny. Your point is probably 75% in terms of like his overall ability.
Yes.
And how
No, I don't think they're going to. Yeah, I didn't mean the Duke's going to. Yeah,
because that's the thing. I mean, you look at he hasn't played. He didn't play last year in high school basketball. He blew out his knee at the middle of the year, end of the year.
No, he played 10 seconds or 30 seconds or something like that.
Yeah. And
there was the very beginning of the first game at Oak Hill for his senior season. He blew out his knee.
Blew out his knee and then and immediately went to Duke to start rehabbing and everything. And so he hasn't practiced, hasn't played since high school, hasn't gotten used to any of this stuff with Duke. I mean, like, even though he's going through it now. And
at that pace.
It's just, it's a lot to get up to speed on. I don't know that he'll be ready to really contribute and be the type of player people expect him to be until the very end of the season. And going through ACC play and trying to get back into the mix, well, I just don't think that's an easy thing to do for a freshman.
One, I don't think it's easy. And two, I think you just, I mean, just hedge your bets. Like,
well, the biggest problem is if something happens again,
you're talking three knee injuries in 4 years, three ACL injuries.
Well, I mean, he's already had three surgeries because that's why he's not
back
right now.
He had a scope, right?
Yeah. He's already had a
but I'm saying, if he tears an ACL again, that's three ACL tears already.
And if you're NBA teams, you got Derrick Rose on your mind.
Well, I mean, they've already got Greg Oden on their mind.
Well, yeah, Greg Oden on your mind. Yeah, exactly right.
So that's already a major red flag. The question is, do you do more by coming back, maybe not being as good as we expect you to be, but at least showing us, hey, he's still athletic, he's still the Harry Giles we thought physically, or do you just be the unknown and hope they hate all the rest of the
business? Well, I think that's where you get some feelers from GMs around the league behind closed doors and figure out what some of them are thinking.
They're gonna base 90% of what they do on the workouts and the things he does leading up to the draft anyway.
And the GMs, they're going to say they want to see him, obviously. Yeah. So I don't think you can take their word for it right now. I think what you have to bet on is the fact that every single draft – the NBA GMs want to draft the guy they don't know anything about. Yeah. We saw it with Georgios Papagiannis this year, the 7-footer from Greek, who we had already seen play for Team Takeover, was absolutely dreadful in AAU.
Couldn't score 4 points a game in AAU.
Against all the guys that they were passing up on to take this kid. So if I'm Harry Giles, I think you're right. I think sitting out's the right call.
I've kind of felt that way, you know, since the summer. Like, I just don't – and then he had the additional scope. I think it just makes sense to sit.
And I don't think it changes how I feel about Duke either. Like, I think Duke is what they are right now, and that's a definite top 10 team, good team, team that can really score. I like all their other talent. And honestly, by the time it got to beginning of the year and he wasn't in the mix yet, I kind of quit factoring him in and is like expecting too much out of him already. So it doesn't really change my expectations for Duke.
They're still awesome.
Yeah, they're really good. Top 10 team without question.
And I think the interesting thing for them is Emile Jefferson has been a lot better than I thought he was going to be so far this season. I think, you know, Luke Kennard has probably been their best player, but Emile Jefferson has been that glue guy that is getting them wins, and that's the role that Giles would come back in.
Right.
And you would be taking Emile Jefferson off the floor. It would be a talent upgrade, but is Giles going to be able to do the things for them that Emile Jefferson is doing for them right now?
Trying to do too much to showcase.
They're still with Tatum and Bolden, they're still clearly, I think, the best team in the country right now. Well, I'd love to see them in UCLA, though.
You think Duke is the best team in the country?
With Tatum and Bolden on the floor? Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think they're the most talented.
Okay.
I want to see those two guys worked in before I declare them the best. They're clearly the most talented with those two guys back on the roster. Now they need to work them in, get everything going. But I think they're the prohibitive favorite to win the title, yeah.
Wow.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, I've still definitely got Villanova ahead of them. I still who is the other team? UCLA we were just talking about. I still got UCLA ahead of them. I still think UK is better than them. I don't know. I don't think they're prohibitive favorites to win, that's for sure.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, fellas. Certainly we started the conversation off with something that ended up breaking news during the whole podcast, so that changed things. I'm just going to stick my neck out and say, Kerry Combs, Kerry Combs, Kerry Combs.
I just want to say I pulled off a yeoman's, like, work today with you guys just running out of the room and talking on cell phones and – Chad nose breathing into microphones while he's on a cell phone.
I ran out of the room.
Well, I think just him, but it felt like it was just you because I'm over here on this side.
Right,
of the
room. Gotcha. And you're carrying the show like you always do.
It's just a lot of distractions going on over there.
Well, I got a tip that Brown was taking the Purdue job. The guy called me four times.
He's working the phones.
That's only been out on Twitter for an hour and a half.
He's working the phones.
I got it 15 minutes before it broke.
He did. He's working the phones.
Okay.
I don't take up for him very often. I'm going to take up for him on this
one. Can we end the podcast, please?
We can. All right. We'll be back on Friday to talk a lot more college basketball and more Kerry Combs. Have a great week.